Representative Louise Stutes of Kodiak, Cordova, and Yakutat. She just recently, I think, announced that she was going to be joining the Republican coalition in the House of Representatives. And so now you've got, you know, 20 Republicans and 20 Democrats in the 40-member House, and you need, obviously, you need 21 votes for a majority in order to gain control. And so everyone's eyes are now fixed on Fairbanks to see what Bart Lebon and Steve Thompson might do, because they've both indicated that they would prefer a Republican coalition in the House. But it's not clear that that's going to happen anytime soon. And it was 2 years ago, I think, that it took the House a month into their session to actually declare a leader. And so we're anticipating something like that again. And then the Senate, you've got some weirdness going on too. There were 13 Republicans that were elected in November, but it's a complex assortment of characters and they don't really agree on everything. There are a bunch of questions on which those 13 Republicans disagree. Senate, it's a 20 member body. And so you need 11 votes to control the Senate, but it sounds like there's just turmoil amongst that 13 majority. And the previous Senate president, Kathy Geisel, she lost her primary. And so the Senate is also kind of in disarray. They're going to have to get their act together. And at this point, I suppose there's a question about what's going to happen if the deadlock continues into January and the legislative session begins without a Senate president and with no control in the House. At the national level, there's, I think, also gridlock on the horizon that portends some ominous political stuff. Nate shared with me a new poll that came out. It's an NPR PBS poll that came out today that showed that though 61% of respondents trust the presidential election results, 3/4 of Republicans distrust those results. That's actually a pretty shocking number historically. I did note that 67% of independents trust the results. Okay, so that's interesting to look at as well. But if you rewind 4 years and you go back to 2016, 65% of Democrats said they trusted the election results, the presidential election results after the election, post-election. Now, it's interesting to wonder about that number because actually before the election, and this is a polling data point from October 15th, 2016, 84% of Democrats said they were going to trust the presidential results. So obviously that number really fell, but not nearly like it did amongst Republicans this year. And so I guess what I'm seeing, Nate, is a lot of political ambiguity at the state level and the national level. And I'm wondering what to expect. I have some theories. What do you think?
Well, my take on some of these things is a little bit cynical. Without the prospect of real significant, meaningful, material change, even in the state of Alaska, a lot of these political situations end up being theater. And I feel bad to observe that. But again, it's kind of hard not to. And there's perpetual talk about the PFD. And that in the last 30 or 40 years seems like something that did affect people's lives in meaningful ways, or at least that's the perception amongst people that PFD check really, really matters to them because it's like a material effect that the government has on them on a yearly basis that's like easy to quantify. And as a result, it ends up being kind of the biggest, most effective issue every election cycle in the state of Alaska. For Trump, from what I can tell, the biggest, most meaningful direct impact his administration and the federal government had on people's lives was in the COVID relief packages and those relief checks that went out to people. And there was a lot of hand-wringing, especially on the left, about him trying to like brand up these COVID relief deposits. But I feel like that's really savvy. I mean, when politics becomes theater and people are voting for the main character on the show, on like, which show do you want to watch? And half the people are going to vote for Donald Trump as the main character and half the people are going to vote for Joe Biden as the main character. So it's no surprise that Trump has success in that kind of scenario. When it comes to like Republicans in the poll that you reference, I think it's important to remember that of the respondents to that poll, that less than 30% self-identify as Republicans. So when we talk about 72% of Republicans are expressing distrust, that really only amounts to like 20% of the poll's respondents are Republicans who are saying that they distrust the results. It's hard not to look at that and think that Trump has had success in his current plan. I mean, he obviously didn't win the election, but it seems clear to me that his main goals in the aftermath of the election were to create a lot of distrust amongst the public so that he can call the election rigged and he can say into perpetuity that he won. and that at least 20 to 30% of people in the country will believe at least some version of that. And also to get people to give him money, which he's also had a lot of success. Even post-election, I think I read this week that he's raised over $200 million just since the election by requesting people donate to this investigation or recount fund, when actually almost all of that money is going directly into like some new PAC that he founded in order to keep his own campaign staff on board. It can pay for travel. It can pay for rallies. He can use that money to have influence in Republican primaries. I don't think that it can be used to directly fund a 2024 campaign for president, but I fully expect him to run in 2024 if he's healthy enough to do it. So I do think that it's a politics of gridlock, both in Alaska and in the federal government. But that's only because it doesn't seem like either side has either the wherewithal or the willingness to do anything. If the goal of a Biden administration or a consolidated coalition in the state of Alaska, if the goal is to kind of try and get back to what the budget situation was and the attitude was before the current presidential or gubernatorial administrations, those are the conditions that produce Trump. Those are the conditions that produce this slash and burn government at the state level in Alaska here too. And I just don't see that being like a viable path for positive change. Did any of that make sense to you, Alex?
Yeah, no, it did. It made a lot of sense. I mean, you call it a cynical take. I don't know if it's cynical or not, but it is tragic that politics has become, as you say, more theatrical, more of a spectacle. The reason that's tragic is that elections have consequences. And you're talking about how difficult it's becoming now in light of impasse, in light of gridlock, to establish real change. And I'm reminded of James Baldwin, who said people would rather cry than change. It seems to me that's sort of a little bit what you're describing. The other thing that I think of is Otto von Bismarck's famous remark that politics is the art of the possible. He had this in mind, that when gridlock and impasse takes place, compromise is the only way forward. It's not clear yet what kinds of compromises in our liberal political order are going to be possible in the future, given the kind of epistemic cultural divide that we've been kind of diagnosing over the course of the last couple of weeks in some of our previous sessions, right? I mean, maybe compromise is becoming less and less and less likely or even possible. It's almost as if now politics is the art of the impossible, it seems to me. And if that's the case, I wonder what we're going to see. Probably if this kind of gridlock and impasse continues at the state and national level, I suppose I expect more executive orders, more executive control, more aggrandized executive power, more state of exception. And probably a lot of our politics are going to surround those questions of who is the main character, who is deciding, you know, to quote George W. Bush, the decider over what some of these executive orders look like. The other thing I'm thinking about is the ways in which our rural-urban political divisions, one of the main factors that's contributing to and shaping up our gridlock, at least at that national level, maybe also at the state level, we have institutions at the national level, like the Senate, that are not particularly Democratic. Even Alaska has two senators, and we almost no one lives in Alaska compared to a place like California or New York or Texas, a more populous state, right? And yet we have the same number of representatives in the Senate. And I think that the rural-urban political divide is going to favor a Republican Senate moving forward. And yet Democrats have won the popular vote in the presidential contests, I think 7 out of 8 last elections, right? So it looks to me, if you put that all together, it looks like we're going to continue to have for the foreseeable future more and more and more impasse. And if so, what kind of charisma is it going to take, or what kind of politics of the impossible is it going to take in order to establish any kind of change? I think that's sort of the question I'm asking myself now. And it's sort of the question that lingers for me after listening to what you just said.
Unless, you know, Ann Selzer, who's come up in our discussions before, and she's actually one of the pollsters from the 2020 election that people kind of looked back at her results from her polls, like leading up to election day, and she was pretty accurate. She was pretty right on, both in the state of Iowa and in some of the other Midwestern states. And her big lesson that she's expressed since then is that people did not really change their minds. Over the last 4 years, people did not really sit on the fence and decide on Trump in 2016 and then decide on Biden in 2020. That was not the difference between the last two presidential elections. The difference was turnout. Obviously, there were a lot more people that voted in 2020 than in 2016 or in any other election since like 1900, percentage wise. And it's very clearly the most by a lot. It's the most people that have ever voted in a presidential election in the United States. But the difference in the results came from turnout. And more traditionally Democratic voters came to the polls. And actually, the difference between Democratic voters and Republican voters was smaller, I think, than some of the pollsters estimated, but it was still enough to make the difference and to elect Joe Biden. So you're probably right that the difference moving forward is going to come from who can be the most charismatic and what is the personality and how can voters like connect in some kind of personal way with the characters on the ticket.
Nate Bauer directs the University of Alaska Press and Alexander Hirsch teaches political science at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm Robert Hannon.